on Friday because we wanted to see the machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbanon without short shifting it. So we skipped over the brisa. So there's a second brisa here. The first brisa is about matzor shor lecher shor debekatan. There's a second brisa that compares shor, generic shor, bor, and eshor. Now, in the brisa, there's a problem. The problem is that there are two famous pturim that are left out. So, for example, the bottom of Tesim and Beis, and please look at it as I'm describing it to you, or Tesim and Beis, when the Gemara compares shor versus bor, the issues that it compares are that a shor pays for an eved, and a shor is asur bahana, and a shor is niskal, and a bor isn't. Wait a second. And there's a bigger difference between shor and bor. Shor is chayiv on kelim. Bor is pater on kelim, at least according to the Rabbanan. Shor velo bor, chamor velo ashor velo adam, chamor velo kelim. So why is the Gemara scratching around for all sorts of chilukim between shor and bor, and a chumra of shor and bor of shloshim shel eved, or excuse me, skila or iser v'hana? Let the Gemara just come and say the obvious: shor is chayiv on kelim, and bor isn't. That's one thing that's missing. The second thing that's missing is when the Gemara compares everything to Eish, Eish also has a classic Ptur. What's the classic Ptur of Eish? Taman. Then if items are concealed, then you're Pater. So why is the Gemara looking for what Eish is Pater from, and the Chumra of Shor versus Eish, and Bor versus Eish? Just come and say, you know what, Shor is Chayiv, even on concealed items. Eish isn't. Bor is Pater, even on concealed items. Eish isn't. So the Gemara has two options to solve this. One option is the Rabbanan. The Mishnah, the Brisa is the Rabbanan. Indeed, your Pater are on Kalim and Tamor. And the Brisa isn't comprehensive. The Brisa is not coming to give a comprehensive list. That's the Gemara's adjustment on the beginning of Testament base. Let's start with Kalim. I just want you to see what's happening in the Brisa before we get to the little lumbus that's involved. Okay, on Testament base, after the Gemara brings the Brisa and it starts to analyze the Brisa, the Lisni, this is around 12 lines down, Chomer b'shor mivavor. Sheshor achayir bo asakelin, mashayin kein b'vor. Now, the Gemara is going to suggest option two, which we'll see later, maybe the brises are b'yuda. If the brises are b'yuda, then kelim is not pater b'vor, and that's not an offset between shor and bor, and therefore the Gemara has to look for exotic differences that shor is chayiv and bor isn't. But the Gemara is going to have a problem with Rabbi Yehuda if Rabbi Yehuda is the town of the brisa, and he's Mechayiv Kalim for Bor, and that's why the Brisa didn't list Kalim as a difference between Shor and Bor. There's going to be another problem, because later in the Brisa, it sounds like whoever wrote this Brisa feels that Bor is Pater on Kalim. So that's going to be a problem in Rabbi Yehuda. So we'll leap over this. The Gemara says, El li olam rabbanani. Okay? We'll see. Option A, which we're going to make as option B, is that this entire Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, and we'll work it out, even though there seems to be a clash between the beginning of the Brisa that doesn't list the Ptur Kalim of Bor as a discrepancy between Shor and Bor. It sounds like Rabbi Yehuda's Mechayev Kalim and Bor, and the end of the Brisa, which makes it sound like that maybe Bor is Pater on Kalim, which is against Rabbi Yehuda. So that's why saying this Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda is not such an easy solution, even though we're working in the beginning, he's Mechayev Kalim and Bor, and that's why the Brisa doesn't say that Shor is Chayev and Kalim and Bor is Pater. So the Gemara says, Elo li olam Rabbanan, really it's the Rabbanan, and the Tana B'Shar. The fact that the Brisa didn't highlight the Ptur Kalim and Bor and use that as the offset between Shor and Bor, it means that this is not a comprehensive kind of a Shire. Wait a second, my Shire to High Shire. Well, what else is missing? So it says Shire Tana. So this is one read of the Brisa. The Brisa is the Rabbanan. It's not a comprehensive list. There's something that Bor is Pater for that everything else is Chayiv, and yet the Brisa didn't talk about that Kalim. There's something that Eish is Pater for that everything else is Chayiv, namely Tamun, and the Brisa is incomprehensive for whatever reason. The Chiluk and the Brisa raised have a certain common denominator between them. Brisa is not looking to give a comprehensive list. Okay, so that's the first way. I'm sorry. That's the first way to read the Gemara. Yeah, let me just make sure this word is not going to get in the way. Okay, now when the Gemara quotes Tamun, okay, Shire Tamun, namely, that would be something that Brisa could have raised about Eish, that Eish is Pater and Tamun, and that Bor and Shor is Chayiv in Tamun. So therefore, that's a legitimate candidate to distinguish between Shor and Bor and Eish. Shor and Bor is Chayiv in Tamun. Eish is Pater in Tamun. And yet the Brisa didn't raise Tamun, just like it didn't raise Kalim. So that's the simple way to read the Brisa. There are all these Pturim that are unique to Bor, Kalim, Rabbanan, unique to Eish, Tamun. The Brisa didn't quote them. Now,
Rashi and Tosfos get into the following question. Okay, so you're telling me that something which is tamun is chayiv enesh, is pater enesh, and pater in shor and bor. What would be a case of tamun for bor? Shor, I understand. The shor goes and, I don't know, kicks a bag of something, and there's something inside the bag, so the shor would be chayiv even though it's tamun, whereas if you light a fire and it burns the bag, the contents, you're pater, because it's tamun. What would be a case where bor is chayiv in tamun? Because that's the premise of the Gemara. The Braisa could have said Tamun. Tamun would have been Pater Freish. It would have been Chayiv and Shor and Bor. The Braisa is not comprehensive. Tana v'Shayir. What would be a case? So Rashi has a very famous line. Rashi, Dibra Maschel Shayir Tamun. Nahavale Lamisne Chomer B'Shor V'Bor Mibesh. The Braisa could have, in theory, differentiated between Shor and Bor and Esh. Why? Shem Bat Shor V'Sak Male Kelem Shibra. If an animal kicks a bag full of kelim, and he breaks the kelim, chayiv, both on the bag and the kelim, even though the kelim are tamun, because tamun doesn't exempt shor. Oh, im nafal chamor bibor, v'alav sak shmalei tefuah, chayiv. What would be the case, the scenario of tamun, there would be chayiv and bor, if a bag full of wheat falls into the bor? Those are the cases the Braisa could have intuited or could have implied. Shor would be chayiv kicking a bag of kelim, bor would be chayiv bag of wheat, or bag of kelim for that matter, or the Braisa's bag of wheat, and the Braisa, and A should be pater. The Braisa didn't. This just proves that the Braisa is not comprehensive. Tosa says, wait a second. Why is Rashi saying that you'd be chayiv on the wheat if it falls into bor, even though it's tamun? After all, what does Tosa say? The wheat is kelim. And bor is pater on kelim. So the Gemara and Rashi spends this whole time trying to concoct a scenario of tamun that's chayiv and bor, which is pater on esh, and that would have been the Braisa's candidate, but it didn't, and that proves that the Braisa is incomprehensive. Wait a second. Bor is pater on tefuah, because tefuah is a type of kelim. Tosfos dibra maschil, uperish akuntris, kigon bat shor besak male kelim. If you didn't see Tosfos, now's a good time. These are easy but famous Tosfos in. Veshibran. Tosfos says, chamor comes and excludes everything that's inanimate, whether it's an actual kli like this, or whether it's tefuah. Why does Rashi say that if a bag of tefuah falls into a bor, you're chayiv, and that's the difference between bor and esh, and the Braisa could have said that difference, and the fact that it didn't shows the Braisa is incomprehensive? Bor should be pater on a bag of tefuah, not because of tamun, but because it's kelim, says Tosfos. Now Tosfos doesn't really answer Rashi's question. He just says lo duck. Who did answer? Who gives a different scenario for a case where bor is chayiv on tamun? Anyone say? Miri, Rebbeinu Peretz, what do they say? Not a bag full of tefuah, but a bag full of... What's the only case where bor could be chayiv on tamun? Bor is only chayiv for animals. So be a bag full of animals. I have a bag full of animals. It's a bag full of chicken, gerbils, whatever. Tosfos says, chickens, they don't have gerbils, but small little chickens. Namely, there's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Would the patur kalim apply to tefuah in a bag? Rashi says the patur kalim would not apply to tefuah in a bag. And therefore, he feels comfortable saying that's the case. We'll borrow b'chayiv, even though it's tamon, and that would have been the chilak of the Gemara that Eish is chayiv and boris patur. And in fact, the Braisa didn't say it, means it's incomprehensive. Tosfos feels that even tefuah in a bag is pater, because anytime you have kelim, it's pater. And here we're talking about animals in a bag, and animals aren't kelim, therefore you're chayiv, even though it's tamar. So the question is, what's this machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos? Most importantly, what sheet is Rashi? Because the simple shot is with Tosfos. How could you be chayiv on tefuah? Tefuah is kelim. When the Torah pater is kelim, it doesn't mean kelim, like dinei tumah of the Torah, adopt the kli v'lo ochel. It means anything that's not a shor. Shor v'lo adam. Chamor, velo kelim. Kelim, tefuah, glass, whatever. It doesn't have to be kelim. It can be anything that's damaged. It's not money. Let's say your money falls in and gets ruined. Those days the money was something which is easily ruined. Shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim, velo tefuah, velo kesef, velo shem. Everything is pater, as long as it's not a living animal. Shor is chayiv and chamor is chayiv. Nothing else. What sheet does Rashi? Yes?
Like the bag itself not be considered like some sort of clean. It's not like a living.
Okay, I mean, the question can also be asked about the bag, but certainly about the tefuah, right? Again, Rashi's not saying you're chayiv on the bag, you're chayiv on the tefuah. You could ask about the bag also, but Rashi could concede that you'd be pater on the bag, but you'd be chayiv on the tefuah, even though it's tefuah. Okay, yes, Yehuda?
The question could be, what's
chayiv
on the tefuah?
Exactly. Say one step less abstract and then one step more abstract. What's the Petor Kedlin? Okay, let me give
you... Either or couldn't have done it.
Right, very good.
Or that you didn't create the hazard.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, namely, let me give you three levels. We have to put this down for a minute. The first level is this machlokas, follow the three levels, follow the structure. The first level is machlokas Rashi and tells us about the scope of the Petor Kedlin. Tells us that it applies to everything. Rashi says it doesn't apply to a bag of tefillah on the back of an animal. Okay? That's the first thing. This, Yehuda feels, reflects the nature of the Petor Kedlin Mabor. Scope reflects nature. And Yehuda's saying the nature of the Petor Kedlin Mabor might reflect the Mechayev Mabor. So just build level of your mind, try to connect them faster, try to split them so you can see them clearly. Here we have a machlokas of scope. Rashi says it only applies to Kedlin, it doesn't apply to Sakmali tefillah. Tassus says it applies even to Sakmali tefillah. Yehuda's saying this could reflect a fundamental distinction had to be the Petor Kedlin. And Yehuda is saying that the fundamental distinction had to be the Petor Kedlin could reflect how we view the Mechayev Bar, because every fail proves the principle. Kryptonite proves Superman. So why Kedlin is part of Bar can help us better understand Bar. Correct. That's the structure of the Sukkah. Lachara, what Yehuda is saying, I'll just sharpen it, you're 80% of the way there. We could view, just start, that's why you're combining level 2, level 1, that's 3, 2, 1. Lachara, if we're working on level 2, I don't have time to get up and draw on the board, what's the nature of the Petor Kedlin and Bar? So one approach is to say that's the Gezeiras HaKosev, like we saw in the Hayamid base. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can create complete, comprehensive liability. That would lead to a shutdown. No one would dig a pit. No one would dig for water. No one would dig for oil. No one would dig pits to store things. They needed pits more than we do. So people have to be able to dig pits. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to create scenarios in which you're potter. So Hashem decided you're chai for living things, not men, for whatever reason. We'll see why Shor V'lo Adam. But you're part of inanimate objects. It's a Gezeiras HaKosev. You hear the saying, maybe it's not a Gezeiras HaKosev. Maybe, now here's level one. If the whole Mechayev of Bor is not just Pshia or Mammon, remember this is our three-part tree.
Pshia or Mammon, right? Or this new Mechayev called Yetziras HaMazik. If the Mechayev of Bor is he created a Mazik,
and we saw that that's why the person who put the 10th tefach there is chayiv, because he created the final mazik. And that's why we saw that if the boar is only test, even though the animal died, because a boar test doesn't typically kill, and if we haven't created a lethal mazik. So if the mechayiv of a boar is yitziras ha-mazik, as you hear the saying, then maybe you're out there for things which the boar doesn't represent the natural hazard to. A boar represents a natural hazard to items that have mobility that can come to the boar, and items that don't have intelligence, namely animals. Human beings should watch out for the boar, so the boar isn't a hazard for human beings. That's why Shor V'lo Adam Chamorah, Shor V'lo Adam. And non-portable items, if I dig a boar here, how does that endanger Adam's non-portable items in Riverdale? These items can't walk. Items don't have legs. So I haven't created a danger. The poor Kalim and boar, you're just suggesting, is not just a Xeris and Kassif. It's built into how we view the Mechayev and boar. Namely, said otherwise, if the Mechayev Bor is a regular Mazik, Shia versus Mammon, something like that, okay, then we have to say that the Petor Kedlin is a default. It's Moshea, I dug a Bor, that Bor led to your Nezek, I own the Bor, and therefore I'd be Chayev if it weren't for Gezeiras HaKosev. There's no rhyme or reason, there's no rational reason to exempt Kedlin. But if the Mechayev Bor is I created a Hezek, then maybe I'm only Chayev for items which were endangered when I initially dug. Remember, to the point of it, how did the Kedlin get there? I don't know, is that important to me? If that's true, Yehuda is saying, the Petor Kedlin and Bor is not just a Gezeiras HaKosev. The Petor Kedlin and Bor is that the Bor is not a mazik for non-portable items. What would happen when a Bor damages items to which it is a hazard for? Normal Kedlin Bor doesn't imperil, because how did Kedlin get there? What about portable Kedlin? Well, what do I mean by portable Kedlin? Kedlin don't have legs. What about items that are typically transferred from place to place? Your vase, it doesn't typically move from place to place. Your dining room table, it doesn't typically move from place to place. What about items that are constantly stolen on the market, stored in bags, shipped as units, and constantly moving from place to place? It's called business. They don't have wheat in, I don't know, in Morocco, so they import, maybe they're there, but they import it from the Ukraine. So the wheat in Ukraine is earmarked to get to Morocco. So if I dig a bar in Morocco, then that endangers the wheat, because the wheat's going to be passing by. The wheat's going to be moving along that route. So maybe when Rashi says a sak male tvua, you're chayiv, and you don't apply the Petor Kedlin for bor, maybe Rashi felt that because the Ptur Kelim in Bor is not a Gzeres HaKasif. Tosos salt, the Gzeres HaKasif, it covers anything that's a Kli. Kelim, Ptur, doesn't make a difference. Whereas Rashi's more limited scope for the Ptur, I'll say that again, Rashi's more limited scope for the Ptur is only items that don't typically move, but non-portable items that are transferred from place to place, you're chayav for, because he felt the Ptur is not a broad Gzeres HaKasif, he felt the Ptur is that items that aren't imperiled by the boar is not considered Yetziras HaMazik. A proof to this can be brought from a very interesting Gemara. Let's take a look at the fifth parak. The Gemara didn't show you, but it's an interesting proof that oftentimes people quote that you could be chayiv for kelim if the item endangers it. What would happen, or one second, is this a fake? Well, you know, let's move on. I don't want to show it to you because... Okay, we'll get to that later. Okay, so this is the first Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. And keep in mind, from this Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, because we may have a second Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos that suggests otherwise in Rashi and Tosfos, from this Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, it sounds like Rashi may be viewing Bor as a Yetziras HaMazik, therefore interpreting the Ptur Kelim because the Bor does it in peril, therefore limiting the Ptur Kelim only to items which are not normally moved from place to place. Pesach Malei Tvua, which is moved from place to place, Rashi says the Ptur doesn't apply. Yes, Adia.
Even if you say
It's just it's something I have to take in mind. It's not a hazard for them, but I have to imagine that at some point the kelim can fall in there. So I'm engaging the level of hazard, I go based on the normal scenario. I'm engaging based on pshia, I would say pshia for all sorts of things. If that's the one that gets damaged, remember, I could be high for that's a pshia as long as there's someone that I have to pay. Okay, so you could limit the pshia, but certainly if it's a tzeiras hamazik, there's much more reason to limit it because we look at the point of creation, not what happens later. What did you do at the point of creation? Okay. Now there's another machlokas, but to get to this machlokas, we have to see the other version of the brisa. That's why I wanted to take some time. There's a lot of just how to read Gemara here, not only lambdas, and I didn't have time to do that on Friday. Okay, so remember, we have a brisa, just to reset the clock, which distinguishes between shor and bor and esh, shor and esh, and it doesn't mention kelim. So Gemara says, oh, you know why? Because the brisa is incomprehensive, even though kelim is pater by bor, it doesn't mention all the ptur. It doesn't mention kelim, doesn't mention tamun bayesh, and it's the rabban. That's actually version two. Version one of the brisa is that this brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why the brisa didn't mention kelim. You know why the brisa didn't mention ptur, kelim, and bor? It doesn't exist. Rabbi Yehuda is mechayev a bor and kelim, and that's why the brisa couldn't talk about kelim. That's the first version of the Gemara. Let's read it now together. This Bryce is Rabbi Yehuda. Look at Daf Yud. The Lisni, this is about 13 lines in. The Lisni, Chomer B'Shor Mi B'Bor, Shashor Chaye Boas HaKelim, Masha Enkein B'Bor. Why doesn't the Bryce talk about Kelim? So the Gemara answers, this is the Gemara's first answer, which it struggles with, well, it has a solution. Hamani Yehuda, D'Machayev L'Niska Kelim B'Bor. So this Bryce that doesn't raise the Torah Kelim and Bor, it holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Or is chayiv in kelim, therefore it's not an offset. It's not the Rabbanan that it's an incomprehensive brisa. The brisa is comprehensive. It just didn't have Ptur kelim to distinguish because it holds like Rabbi Yehuda. If that's true, the Gemara says, wait a second, we have a problem with the end of the brisa. You want to fit Rabbi Yehuda in because the beginning of the brisa didn't talk about kelim. When it distinguished between shor and bor, didn't mention kelim. It must be holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Kelim is chayiv. What about the end of the brisa? The end of the brisa, when it distinguishes between bor and esh, now listen carefully, it says, oh, esh. Esh has a chumrah that you're chayiv both for ro'ilo and ain ro'ilo. Bor doesn't have that chumrah. Bor is only chayiv for ro'ilo, not ain ro'ilo. That line is going to be prickly according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because what is, oh, esh is chayiv both for items that are ro'ilo, that are normally consumed by esh, and items that are not normally consumed by esh. Bor is only chayiv for items that are normally damaged, not things that are not normally damaged, ain ro'ilo. Was in a royal, that's Kelim. So the Bryce is specifically saying that you're Pater and Kelim. How could you say this Bryce is a Behuda when the Seifa seems to say you're Pater and ain't a royal for Bor, which is Kelim? That's the Kasha, and the Gemara is going to respond to that Kasha that ain't a royal for Bor is not really Kelim, it's something else. So let's read the Gemara. The Gemara says, Ema Seifa. Everyone look inside. It's not an easy Gemara to read. You have to read it a few times just to wrap your head around it. Ema Seifa. The line begins, E Rabbi Yehuda, Ema Seifa. Chomer Be'esh Mibabar, She'esh Darko Leilichul Hazik, Umord Lachal, Bein Roila, Bein Davar She'en Roila. Mashenkin Bebar. Davar Roila, Mainim. What's Roi for Esh Eitzin? Davar She'en Roila, Mainim. You're Kalim. Mashenkin Bebar. So you're saying that Bor is Plater and Kalim? You're Rabbi Yehuda, Amen Bechaifa, you're Rabbi Yehuda, Niska Kalim Bebar. So that's because of this internal clash, at this point the Gemara abandons Rabbi Yehuda and goes to the Rabbanan, which we read before. Eliyahu Rabbanan didn't mention Kalim, didn't mention Tamon, Tanav Ashire. We have an internal problem with Rabbi Yehuda. On the one hand, the beginning of the Brisa doesn't mention Kalim, so our inclination is to say because the Brisa also Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, the end of the Brisa says that Eish is Chayiv on Eitzim and Kalim, Roy Ve'enaroy, and Bor is Patar on Enaroy, and Lechayiv and Roy, not Enaroy, which is Kalim. The Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, I get to say that Bor is Patar on Kalim. So the Gemara's first adjustment is here, right? The Olam Rabbanan, this Brisa has nothing to do with Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbani, you could have mentioned Kalim, you could have mentioned Talmud, it just left things out. Then the Gemara circles back, Ibai Yisema. Now let's pick up the Ibai Yisema. No, maybe we can read Rabbi Yehuda into the Brisa. And that's why the first part of the Brisa didn't mention Kalim, because we don't like Rabbi Yehuda that Kalim is Chayiv in Bor. Le'olam Rabbi Yehuda. But what is Davar She'en Aroyla by Bor? What do we mean that Bor is Pater and Ein Aroyla? Ish is Chayiv for everything in Bor is Pater and Ein Aroyla. Davar She'en Aroyla Lav La'asriye Kalim Ela La'asriye Lichacha Nira V'sichzacha Avanav. Eish is chayiv if it scorches land or burns and blackens rocks, whereas bar would be patur on land and rocks. This whole brisa is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is mechayiv bar and kalim. That's why the first part of the brisa didn't even mention kalim because you're chayiv and kalim. They don't want to say, oh, shor is chayiv and kalim, bar is patur, because bar is chayiv and kalim. The end of the brisa that distinguishes between eish hachamor and bar hakal, eish is chayiv for roi and enaroi, and bar is not chayiv for roi, not enaroi, enaroi doesn't mean kalim, it's Rabbi Yehuda, chayiv and kalim. Ain a rye that Eish is chayiv for that Boris Patar is karka. If Eish scorches karka or ruins whatever, I'm chayiv. If my bor ruins your karka, then I'm patar. That's the way Rashi reads. Now, we don't really know, and it's not this Rashi, it's Rashi a little bit later, which we'll see. We don't really, really know why bor is patar on karka from this Gemara. It just says it. Rashi's explanation emerges from the continuation of the Gemara, because the Gemara is not finished yet. Okay, so we solved the Brisa. There are two ways to read the Brisa. It could be the Rabbanan, and we left out Tor Kalim and Tor Taman. It could be Rabbi Yehuda's Mechayiv and Kalim and Boris Pater from Karka. Just wait a second. There's a third Ptor that's missing in this Brisa. Anyone know? It's a strange Ptor. What's the third Ptor that's missing in the Brisa? Shor Psulei Hamukdashim. If there's a karban that gets pasul and you have to redeem it, for whatever reason, you're pater and bor. Rashi says the reason is the Torah writes about mesi yellow, but the nizik takes the dead carcass, and if it's shor psul mikdashim, he can't just take the dead carcass. So when the Brisa considers bor versus eish or bor versus shor, why did it say that if a bor damages a shor psul mikdashim, bor would be pater and eish and shor would be chayv? So the Gemara says, look. Based on our two options, this is all just Gemara, guys, no lumbus. The Rabbanan have an easy time, because what's the Rabbanan's answer? If this Brisa is the Rabbanan, why doesn't the Brisa say Sharp Shulam Mekdashim? None of a sign. This is an incomplete Brisa. Don't start hacking me, where's this, where's that? Doesn't say Talmon, doesn't say Kalim, doesn't say Sharp Shulam Mekdashim. But if you fell, the Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, that's why the Brisa didn't mention Kalim, and that later one, when the Torah is Mechayiv, Brisa is Mechayiv, and Bor, Eish, on Ena Roy, Lava, Bor's Patra, means Karka. So what else did the Brisa leave out? So the Gemara says again, Maskif la Ravashi. Listen, Yechomer b'shor mi'bibor, Shashor ha'chayiv o'shur p'sul mekdashim, Mashen kin b'bor. Iyam b'shul rabbanan hi, Adi d'shayir ha'ach, Shayir ha'miach. Left out tamon, left out kelo, left out shur p'sul mekdashim. Eliyam r'd b'yuda, my shayir d'hai shayir. Oh, so left out shur p'sul mekdashim. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue with this. He can't say he's mechayiv b'shur p'sul mekdashim. He's patras bor, shur mekdashim. So evidently the Brisa is missing something. What else is missing? So the Gemara repeats it again. It says, Dash Benira. Karka. If a shor damages karka, you're chayiv. If an eish damages karka, you're chayiv. If bor damages karka, you're patar. And that's the offset between shor and eish versus bor. Brisa doesn't mention that. Just like it didn't mention karka as the offset between shor and bor, shor and eish and bor, it didn't mention psul mekdashim as the offset. The Gemara says, Alichacha Dash Benira. So what is dash beniro? Rashi says, shim dash hashar beniro v'niskav v'nikach chayiv. Let's say I just plowed my land. Now is around the time you would plant, Mar Cheshvan. So I spend the entire month, the entire couple of weeks between Yantif and now plowing the land. And now I'm ready to seed the land. And you let your animal run all over my plowed land and ruin it. So that would be chayiv. It's actually a chiddush in Rashi. That would be keren. Whatever reason it's keren. Right now we'll get to keren. We'll come back to this Rashi in Eretz Hashem. But a shor would be chayiv. We already know that Eish would be chayiv for karka. We said it before in the Brisa. Lichachaniru v'sichas chavana. Now Rashi says, Masha'inkin bebor. A bor that damages karka, you'd be pater. Why would bor be pater on karka? If karka's not metalflin, why would he be pater? So Rashi says, Tilo shaykh. I can't imagine a scene where bor damages karka. How is he even shaykh? Is that a fundamental p'tur of bor or a technical p'tur? Technical. Let's open the Rashba. I don't remember if I gave it to you, but let's open the Rashba. The Rashba, in a previous piece, yeah?
Would bor not inherently be damaging karka?
But what do you mean inherently?
By digging a bor, assuming it's not your rishos.
How can you damage karka?
Put a hole in your field.
That's... Oh, in Rishos HaYachid, that's not bor. Bor is only in Rishos HaRabim or in my Rishos. If I dig a hole in your land, that's not the mamasik, it's not bor. Not worse, right? I'm mamasik your karka. Right? Good point, Alex. Cute question, right? Right? Okay. Like the famous question of Shor Tama, I don't know if we get to Shor Tama, right? Shor Shenagach is Niskal. Shor Muad Shenagach is Kofar. How can you ever have a shor muad, shenagach, if it gets skila the first round? How many answers to this question? Four. The Gemara talks about it later on. So the cute questions, right? The answer is, it's right in front of your own eyes, right? If you take a bor, you're not chayiv for bor, you're chayiv for the mamasik, even before anything falls into it.
What if someone does fall into the bor, even after your chayiv?
The putter, that your bor. The person who owns the land has to clean that, has to watch it. Okay, so the Rashba, on that testament base, okay, it's Dibra Maskil, the last Dibra Maskil on testament base, Hadakam or Chomer Bashor. If you have the blue Rashbaz or the Kuk Rashbaz, it's on Daf Nundalit on the top. He quotes the Yishalmi. And the Yishalmi says, Vamesi Yelo, Tanar Rabbi Yishmael, Yatsu Karkos Shein Metaltalin. This is specific Limud. The bor is pater on kark. The mesi elo, only something which is dead, and obviously kark never dies. Only things that can die or break, and breaking is like dying. But kark can never really be broken. It can be scarred, but it can't be broken. A kli can die, right, in halachic terms, because it loses all utility. A person, obviously, a human being, a living thing can die. Kark never dies. Kark can, right, the only kark that ever died was stone. The dead kark. Kark doesn't die. It can get scarred, it can get charred, it can get scorched. So that Macy alone sounds like there's no din in karka. Now the Rashba doesn't give us a scenario of karka, but a little bit later, Dibra Maskil v'lichecha niro v'sichcha vanav, he says ulai im machmas boro nafal koslo shel chavera. What happens if I dig a bor and your wall falls down? You have to be very, very careful about this Rashba. Rashba saying that's a scenario where bor damages karka. And that's a scenario where we need Xeris HaKasif to say bor is better. Now the Rashba says with Sarachim, because he's trying to thread the needle. If when I'm digging the bor, your wall falls down, what do we call that? Adam Amazik. If I dig the bor and 5 years later your wall falls down, what do we call that? Grama. That's the second parak of Baba Kama. I may not be allowed to dig my bor close to your wall. Those are the din of HaKashenim, according to Rabbanan. The mazik, quote unquote, the reason, the person that's causing the damage has to move his bor back. According to the Rabbi Yossi, you don't have to. But no one says you have to pay. The dinim of harchaka shenim, where neighbors have to move their bees or mustard seeds, whatever, is just who has to move back and forth. No one pays. There's no payment in Bavel Basu. So the Rashba is talking about a very interesting case where it doesn't happen immediately, but it happens immediately enough that my bor causes your wall to fall down. And that would be called bor hamazik karka, which in theory would be chayev, But there's a gezeres hakasif to make you pater. When I read this Rashi, I say, what about an Eved Kanani that falls into a bar? An Eved Hukshul Karkos. So why doesn't the Rashi quote Eved Kanani that falls in? Or maybe an Atzitz Nakov. Let's say you have a plant with a hole in the bottom of the planter that's attached to the ground and falls into a bar. Problem is, when it falls in, it's no longer attached to the ground, so it's no longer a karka. But the Rashba feels it's a gzeres hakasav to be motzi karka from bor, whereas Rashi says it just can't exist. Now, Yehuda, this Rashba is very similar to what you said by Caleb. That if the chayev of bor is a tiras hamazik, then even if in theory I can create portable karka, get away from the karka to be in the bor, since karka doesn't move, a bor in Morocco doesn't endanger my land in Tel Aviv. It can't be called the tiras hamazik. Rashi, for some reason, didn't see this Yushalmi. I would have loved for Rashi to say the same thing. That just like Rashi, in theory, says the Ptura Kalim is not a Xeris Akasav, but it's based on the Bor being Xeris Amazik. And that's why the Ptura Kalim doesn't apply to portable Kalim, that are normally moved around like a Sak Moli Trua. I would have liked for Rashi to say the same thing by Karka. You know why you're Ptur in Karka? Because it's not a Mazik, if that's Rashi's shot. So why does Rashi go with technical rather than fundamental? Again, when Rashi meant technical, couldn't imagine a case where Bor is Mazik Karka, because the Rashi's case is so hard to compile. Because again, if it's long term, it's a grama. If it's immediate, it's adam. Where's the case that karka could be nizik in a bor? These are two issues that come up in the Gemara Daf Yudam and Aleph. Now you realize why I didn't want to talk about it on Erev Shabbos. This just takes a lot of teasing out from this. Okay, I wanted to really focus on the Machlokas Rebbe and the Rabbanon of Tes Vishlimul Yud. But these are two very important Machlokas about bor. If bor is the Yitziras HaMasek, Napshi and Mamon, it could be that's the reason that it's Pater on Kalim and Pater on Karaka, and that's why you have Xeris HaKasim for Karaka. It's not just a technical inability. And if that's the reason you're Pater on Kalim, it may only apply to Kalim that are non-portable, not Kalim that typically move, like a Sak Malei Tfuah. Okay, the Gemara talks about Kalim a little bit later on Daf Nun Beis and on Gimel. I'm going to not go into it now because I want to make sure we get a little headway in Baba Kama Nafiq. Okay? Take a second, breathe, wake up, I'm going to drink, and then we're going to move on to the continuation of the game. Okay. Okay. Good, we're making good headway. Okay, now Yudam and Aleph. Remember, just to reset the clock, the second line of the Mishnah. The first line of this Mishnah, this iconic Mishnah, the highlight was the word Hechsharti. Called Shechavti Bishmireso, Hechsharti is Nisko. And we saw two versions in Rashi what the word Hechsharti means. One version in Rashi means I enabled the Nezek, and it's like I did it, almost as if my Shia makes me complicit. I was Machshir or Mazmin the Nezek, which is a Chiddush in the Machayev. The Machayev is not Mamun, the Machayev is Pshia. And maybe not just Pshia, but Pshia makes it as if I did it. The second version in Rashi that he quotes as Rebbe's is that Hechsharti doesn't describe the nature of the Mechayev, it describes the nature of the Tashlumin. That when I pay, alai lahachshir ulatakin es anesek. The Chiyev is not money or value, the Chiyev in Bava Kama is replacement and repair, and money is in lieu of replacement, and metaltlin is in lieu of replacement, because you could sell it immediately. And going back to the Priyom Kippur Shiurim, that could be why a Mazik has to pay Meitav. Meitav isn't just some chumrah that we slap on the wrist of the Mazik. You have a responsibility to repair the broken item. If there were some magical substance that you could, like mun, that you can turn into a clay or into peros or into whatever you wanted to, you pay that back. We don't have a magical substance. The closest we have to a magical substance is called money, because you can buy whatever you want with it. So when I give you money, it's like I'm giving you back your peros or your clay. If I don't have money, I give you back portable items that can be sold anywhere. Just take it to some other place and sell it, get money, and rebuy your fruit or repair your clay. Or buy a new clay. If I don't want to pay back money, and I don't want to pay back portable items, I want to pay back karka, then it has to be hyperliquid. What's hyperliquid karka? We call that meta. Karka that's going to fly off of the market. The second I put it up for sale, everyone's going to grab it, and within 3 hours I'll have my money, and I could use my money as a nizik to go buy my fruit and go buy. That's what we saw. That's why I have to pay you your meta, not my meta. I have to give you the best chance to sell your land. The land that you will sell as quickly as possible. And that's called Meitav, Chitas Rebbe Shmuel, Meitav of the Nisik. Okay? So that was the first line of the Mishnah. The second line of the Mishnah, which we started talking about Erev Shabbos, the Gemara has three more options. What's the second line of the Mishnah? This is even more intriguing. Hechsharti, Chavti, Hechsharti b'miktsas niskal, chavti b'tashlumei niskal, ki hechshir kol niskal. That there are scenarios which I'm only partially liable, or partially negligent, but fully liable. We saw on Erev Shabbos that case. That was the case where Shimon dug one tefach, and yet, according to the Rabbanan, he's chayev for everything, even Nezikin. And even according to Rebbe, you're chayev for Misa. So whether this Mishnah is against Rebbe, even though Rebbe wrote it, it's like the Rabbanan, Achar Acharon, you're chayev, Shimon's chayev on everything. Or as Rav Papa said, maybe this Mishnah is like Rebbe, and it's referring to Misa, and with Misa, Rebbe agrees that the Acharon's chayev. But there are scenarios that the Mishnah is alluding to, where you're chayev, even though you did very little. In this case, Shimon dug one tefach, and he's chayev for everything, according to Rabbanan, even for Nezikin, and according to Rebbe, only for Misa. At which point, the Gemara says, wait a second. Reb Zera says, Vesulo, that's the only case you can conceive of in which you had partial negligence but full liability? There's another case. And the Gemara is going to reject Reb Zera's option or offer by saying, no. In this case, make up your mind. Either he's totally chayev, or he's totally pater. But this isn't partial negligence and full liability. Either it's full negligence and full liability, or it's no negligence, or either partial negligence. But this equation of partial negligence and full liability cannot emerge in this scenario. That's why the Mishnah didn't quote it. It's going to quote two scenarios today, and then a third one tomorrow. Maskifla Rebzera v'su laka, v'ayika masar sharo l'chamisha b'ni adam, u'kasha bo echad mehen, v'hizik chayim. I deliver my animal to five shomrim. And this animal, remember we said a shomer has to not just watch the animal from being damaged, but watch the animal from performing damage. Shmiras nezikin, not just shmiras habehema. He has to pay. We saw the Gemara daf mem heim an aleph, arba nichnesu tachas ha-shomer, shomachinam, shomer sachar, nosei sachar, v'hasocher. A shomer is nichnes tachas ha-bailim, not just to protect the animal from being damaged, but to pay if the animal damages a third party. So let's say I deliver it to five people, and one of them leaves. So he wasn't the full Moshiach, and yet he has to pay entirely, Reb Zera suggests. So the Gemara shoes it away. No. Gemara says, hey, chida. Gemara says, ilema de balavi ulavi minter. Let's say this is a saber-toothed tiger, and it takes five people to watch, five people to hold the ropes, and that's why I gave my saber-toothed tiger to five people, Manchurian tiger, and one of the rope holders left. You're not partially negligent, you're totally negligent. The animal was in a state of being watched with five people holding the ropes. You left your rope, now the animal went out of damage. This is not a case of partial liability, or partial negligence and full liability. Reuven, we'll choose Reuven. Reuven, who left the scene, is completely liable. Because with him, the animal is protected against damaging and guarded. Without him, it's not. So if you need all five people, that's not a case of partial negligence. You're a complete negligent. Ilema, again, line number four from the bottom. Dibalavi, you lohavi minter, pshita, you covet. It's pasha, it's not partial negligence. I don't need the Mishnah to tell me this. If you put into a state of not being guarded and you are necessary, you are one of the five, then you're a complete masik and you're chayiv. Diyu kavid. Ella, and here's the interesting part for our conversation today, for our lundas. Dibilav ihu nami minter. All it takes is one person to watch this animal. But the Gemara says that can't be the Mishnah. Because if all it takes is for one person or four people, it doesn't take five people to watch the animal. And you left, here's the key line, two words, my covet. If it can be watched without you, your abandoning, your guard, your station, will not make you chayiv entirely. My covet. Now here there's a machlokas between Tosos and Rashi, what does my covet mean? What would any sane, moral thinking person say? That if five people were charged with watching, and one person left, and he wasn't necessary for his shmirah, and then the animal got loose and damaged, what would you say? What should that person's liability be? Pater. You think pater? I think 1/5. Look, you abandoned. had your presence been completely necessary, your abandoning would have been gross negligence. But it's not absolutely necessary. But you did abandon it. So when the animal ultimately damages, you pay your share. And when the Gemara says, my kavod, it means, it's not like we're going to slap him, Hillel, with the entire bill. We'll pay his fifth. And therefore, it can't be the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is describing a scenario where you pay for all of it. If Shara the Mishnah is Nisko, that's the my kavod rejection. My kavod would have been watched with four people without you, then your leaving isn't like completely nefarious. You left. If the animal damages, you'll pay your part. You'll pay a fifth. They'll each pay a fifth. And therefore, that can't be the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is looking for a case where you're paying for everything, even though you only did something partially. That's how Tosfos reads. Tosfos, Daf Yudim and Beis, my kavod. B'chulo shmeitzin, tzarech lomer, my kavod, tvei mechrine. What, Reuven is a prima donna? Reuven has the right to walk away? What gives Reuven the right to walk away as opposed to Shimon Levi Yehuda? Reuven's chayiv, he agreed to watch. Again, being that this animal, in theory, could have been watched, it's not a gross pshia. If this is a Manchurian tiger, and you need five people holding the ropes, and you let your rope go, that's gross negligence, and you are the pshia, and you're chayiv for everything. And this is a normal animal, so you can assume that it's going to be watched, but you're a pshia because you're also chayiv to watch, and you should pay your amount. You obligated yourself to the owner to watch the animal, and you disobey that obligation. Adir, who holds like you? Rashi. Rashi says, my kavod, Daf Yudim and Beis, first skinny line, my kavod, Beinu Chayev Klum. Reuven's off the hook. And the question is how to understand Rashi. Why should Reuven be off the hook? Reuven agreed to watch the animal. He has a contract with the owner. He betrayed the contract. He's a shomer. We're talking about a shomer here. What gives a shomer the right to just casually walk away from responsibility of an item he's watching not to pay for damages? After all, you're a shomer. Typically, we think that a shomer concludes his terms of shmirah with what? What concludes the terms of the shmirah? What terminates the shmirah? You say? Returning the item. Until I return this Manchurian tiger, or whatever, it's not a Manchurian tiger, it's a regular animal in the second scenario of the Gemara. Until I return the animal, I'm still a shomer. And as long as I'm a shomer, I agree to watch. When I don't watch, I'm chayiv to pay if the animal damages my part. Why should I be chayiv my part? I have a contract with you. I agreed. Let me give you the following example. Listen carefully. This is a key line. Let's say a person gave his animal to five people to watch, and one of them left, and the animal got damaged. Didn't do damage of Baba Kama, it got damaged. Would you think that number one is Pater? I agreed to watch your animal, I didn't watch your animal. Okay, I pay my part. Evidently, it's relatively easy to walk away from your chiyuv as a shomer with regards to shmiras nezikin. Though Yishai, shmira only ends when I return it to you. And my liability to protect the animal from being damaged will continue until I return the item. When it comes to my liability to third-party victims that the animal I'm watching damages as a shomer, that's something that when I walk away from it, it's easy to walk away from. That, presumably, is the Chiddush in Rashi. I'm a shomer to the very bitter end when I give it back to you. And therefore, any damage that befalls the animal, I'd be chayiv. Even if the animal could have been protected without me, because I agreed to it. I betrayed my responsibility. But my responsibility to watch the animal from damaging other people and my liability to pay those people I never met is something which, if I can more easily walk away from as opposed to the contract I have with you, assuming that the animal's not going to, Manchurian tiger. That's the Chiddush in Rashi. Yehuda, evidently, this machlokas Rashi and tells us, how easy is it for the shomer to walk away from his chiyuv of shmiras nezikin is really a reflection of an abstract question, which is, what's the nature of said this early in the year. See if you can abstract it. The ease by which a shomer can exempt himself from shmiras nezikin, according to Tosfos, is very hard. According to Rashi, very easy. The degree to which a shomer can exempt himself from shmiras nezikin, not protecting the animal from being damaged, but protecting others from this animal damaging and paying for it. The degree to which a shomer can exempt himself is a reflection of
how much shomer owns the object.
The nature of the chiyuv shomer, shmiras nezikin. Just use the word nature, that's what it was the answer. The nature. Just take the phrase and use the nature. It means you're abstracting. Together, the nature. Why should a shomer be chayiv if the animal damages third parties? I'm watching Natan's animal. So I'm obligated to pay Natan if the animal has damage. Why should I be chayiv if it eats Dovi's food? I'm not the owner. So who remembers when we talked about this? One approach is to say, why is the shomer chayiv to watch the animal from eating Dovi's food and pay Dovi, even though I never met you in my life? What? I can't hear you.
I'm the owner.
Okay, maybe that was an extreme version. The shomer becomes the owner. That's maybe a little extreme, but maybe. But what did we say? Who remembers? So machlokas Rambam Raivin. One approach is to say that's bolted to the contract. When I obligated myself to Natan, I agreed to protect your animal. I also agreed to pay. It's built into the nature of a shomer. Another approach is to say, look at the board, that in Bava Kama land, to be liable, you don't have to be an owner or someone that agreed to anything. In Bava Kama land, anyone who has the capacity to watch something is chayiv to watch it. And if not, you become a poshea. It's not because, oh, you're an owner or you have a contract. Piyadol Lishmar. Piyadol Lishmar, you have a responsibility to watch. If you don't, you're a poshea. And you're chayiv, especially if the chayiv Bava Kama is not mammon, it's but poshea. Who did we see is chayiv, possibly a cousin of shomer, in shmiras nezikin, not because of any status they have, but simply whoever has to watch is chayiv to pay. Who did we see? Yishai, Goslin and Ganov. Let's reread Tosfos Daf Nun Chesem and Bay Nun Vav and Bay. Very, very, very famous. I told you this. The most famous Tosfos of Bava Kama. Why is a Ganov chayiv? Asking why a ganav is chayiv if the animal damages other items is basically asking what's the mechayiv of Bava Kama. You can't understand the mechayiv of Bava Kama by looking at normal cases. You have to look at extreme cases. You have to look at the edge of the spectrum. Ganav is the edge of the spectrum. So Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis, Tosfos wants to know why is a ganav chayiv, why is a shomer chayiv. Tosfos in the end is more clear when he addresses ganav. We'll look at the second answer first. V'od, you know why Goslin's chayiv first wide line? Kiva de Goslin, kamalei bershuse, gamlin yinonsin, a Goslin owns it, it's partial ownership, and therefore Goslin becomes a partial owner. And that's why you're chayiv. Now, Shomer, either Dovi becomes an owner, or if a Shomer can't become an owner, then he is Makabel, it has to be something different from Ganav, we can't superimpose ownership on a Shomer. But the first answer tells us, v'yesh lomar, seven lines before it gets wide, this svara. The Gazlan nichnas tachas abaylam. He now has to pay in place of the baylam. The chivan shotzi mishus abaylam. Since he took it out of the shus abaylam, shayu chayavim mishmirasa. Bein habaylam yichalam l'shamra. Vishen nixel meham. So now the original nixel can't watch it anymore because it was taken out of his mishus. Yeshal gazlan l'shamra. Dilin yinazikin from niske mama nikri baylam. You know who has to pay? Call me shabiyad l'shamra. Whoever has the capacity to watch. I no longer have the capacity to watch because Alex stole it from me. Alex, you're the guy with the capacity to watch. We know who else has the capacity to watch? Shomer has the capacity to watch. The chiyuv of a shomer isn't based on any contract he has with the baylim, or maybe he's considered a new status of the baylim until he returns the item. It's not, listen to the following line. The chiyuv of a shomer to pay for damages to third parties is not wired to his status as a shomer. Don't be either a Baal status or a contract that I have. It's simply a state of being. When the item is in my possession, I have to watch. And if I'm Poshaya, then I'm Chayiv. B'yad al-Lishmar. This is a famous conversation between Rav Chaim and the Ur Samech, which Rav quotes. Is the Shomer Aveda Chayiv in Shmiras Nezikin. If I find your lost animal, I automatically become a Shomer. It's a Machlokas Shomachinim, Shomer Sachar. For now, not important. is there any damage befalls the item that I'm watching for you, your lost animal, then I have to pay on the shom. Again, shomachinim, shomasach, depending upon the tables of liability. What happens if I pick up a lost item and I watch it for you, and it damages Dovi's fruit? Would I be chayiv to Dovi because I'm a shomer? And the Yer Samech said, of course, because you're a shomer. And Rechaim said, no, because the whole chiyuv of Shmiras Nesikin for shomer is because of the Kabbalah's Hischaivos, and Shomer Aveda was never Makabel Hischaivos from the owner, because he doesn't know the owner. So the Yer Samech sided with the first pshat in Tosos, whereas Rechaim sided more with Dovi with the second pshat. That's something to do with shomer. What does Rashi think? The ease by which I can walk away. Again, if it's a Manchurian tiger, I'm not walking away. I'm Poshea. The second I walk away, it's called a Poshea. So I was Biyadi Lishmar and I was a Poshea. But if it's a normal animal and I walk away, I can just walk out of my Chiev. What does that sound like? What's the Chiev of a Shomer? Based on his status as a Shomer and Kabbalah's Chiev, or is it just Biyadi Lishmar? Biyadi Lishmar. And if I'm no longer Biyadi Lishmar, because I... Now again... Don't get me wrong. Again, I'm giving you just the basic mahalich through the sugya. Svi, Zev, I'm sorry. If I walk away and someone damages the payment, I'm going to pay my part, Rashi's going to say. I'll pay my fifth to the owner. But I'm taking a risk by walking away. But I'm walking away. Nothing happens to the animal. I trust the other four guys. He didn't say anything. I trust the four guys. I'll watch it. Now I'm no longer Biyadi Lishmar. If it's no longer Biyadi Lishmar, for bad reasons, Evan, and maybe I'm going to have to pay him back if the animal gets damaged, but it's no longer Biyadi Lishmar. So if you need five people to watch, then at the point that I left, that's a Pshia. When I walk away from a Manchurian tiger, that's my moment of Pshia. That animal right now is going to break out of the chains and go damage. But if I leave with a domesticated, calm animal, that's not a Pshia. And then 5 hours later, whatever happens, I'm no longer Biyadi Lishmar. Even though I may still be a Shomer, I'm a Shomer who's not Biyadi Lishmar. And therefore, I'm Patur Shmiras Nezikin, even though I haven't yet removed my Shomer status. This is the Chiddush in Rashi. The Chiddush in Rashi sounds like it's easy for a Shomer, this is how the Rav explained it, easy for a Shomer to walk away from his Chiyuv HaShmir. Because the whole Chiyuv of a Shomer is not a status-oriented, you're a Shomer, you're Chayiv to watch and pay for third-party damages, it's Biyadi Lishmar. Because the Mechayiv Bava Kama, if our tables are correct, it's just Pshia, and who's a Poshe anymore is Biyadi Lishmar, and therefore the Shomer can walk away. Now, I should have said this before, but just to show you how difficult Shitas Rashi is, which Rishon basically re-engineers Rashi, which Rishon says Rashi never really meant it. Anyone remember? Correct, Seth, the Rush. The Rush claims... It's not really what Rashi meant. It's either Rashi, I should have read this before. The Rush basically moderates Rashi, or that's what I'm looking for. I don't want to say neuters Rashi, but takes away the Chiddush, defangs Rashi. Doesn't mean it's such a big Chiddush. Let's see the Rush, because I just want you to know what the Rishonim say in this sugya. The Rush says the reason that the first guy who left is Pater, Rush Simon Tess Chigon, okay. What's anytime you see the word kagon, what is that? What is that? A logical in logical categories. What is kagon? What do we call kagon? When a region says, "Oh, kagon," we call that an ukimta. Only in this case, you know when number one who left, the guy who left his partner, kagon. Shacherim lo silku atzman mishmiras hashor mikisha pasha. For the ratzel the shmur yoser, the chiman shenisher b'shmiras hashor, yichal Hashem b'loach and chin chayav mupater. Shaharei, here's the key chiddush in the Rush, masar lekulan shoro lachom mishiachal l'shamro v'nis ratzel l'shamro afidu b'lo chaverim. Because initially this owner, when he said, he didn't say, I want you five guys to watch the animal. I said, I want one of you five guys to watch the animal. Whoever takes the responsibility, whoever takes their obligation. I want one of you to take the obligation. So when Reuven leaves and the other guys aren't saying anything and they're winking at him and by they're not protesting, it's like they're taking the obligation. So I'm not breaking my shmirah because I was never a shomer. I was one of the five designated potential shomers. And that shomer is a moving status. And it's not like I'm leaving my shomer status. The guy never made me a shomer. He never made five people a shomer. He didn't say, I want you to be a shomer, you to be a shomer, you to be a shomer, you to be a shomer. He said, one of you five guys, between the five of you, I want one shomer. And that's musical chairs. when I decide to walk out of the room, I'll be walking away out of the room. So he's looking at everyone and saying, you know, you sit in the chair, because there's only one chair necessary to watch. There's all the person one or two, whatever. Aval, here's the Aval. However, if you don't have that Ukimta, the end of the rush, Avalim Amrulo, if the other five say, in Ein Charotza Lishma Gam Anachni Mesalkim Esasmeinu Yurchayev, I'm sorry, and the rush also implies, and if the owner originally said, I want you to be a Shomer, and you to be a Shomer, and you to be a Shomer, and you to be a Shomer, not one person whoever chooses to be. I want all five of you to be Shomer, and if you leave, you'd still pay your part, even according to Rashi. Again, look at the language of the rush. The rush says, Sharei Masar Lekulan Sharo Lechol Mishi Yachol L'Shomer V'Nisratzi L'Shomer Afilip Lo Chavera. I never said Yoni and Yehuda and Gavi and Alex and Zeph. I said, you guys, you five guys, one of you watch the animal. And you can decide amongst the five of you. And then when Yehuda decides to leave and Gavi and Yoni and Alex and Zeph are not making mad, not rolling their eyes, okay, you're assuming the other guys are taken. If they say we're not watching, then you're chayiv. But not only that, if I made each of you a shomer, even if they all stay, you're chayiv your part because you cannot escape a shomer. So the Rush says Rashi's talking about a very specific case. It's not mashma like that in Rashi. It's mashma from Rashi that he's talking about in all cases the first person who leaves. Namely, you can dispose or dispossess your chiyuv to pay for third party damages as a shomer with relative ease. Okay, let me just introduce the final case. We have about 6 or 7 minutes. It's not a huge case, but I don't want to get caught up on this tomorrow. The next case, the Gemara says. Okay, again, it reaches the same conclusion, but here there's an interesting machlokas, and I'll show you an interesting Mordechai. Maybe I'll raise the question to you, and you can talk about it. We'll talk about it tomorrow. The next case, the Gemara says in Daf Yud, bottom line, Va'ika marbe bechavila. Now, this machlokas we've shown in what marbe bechavila means. Rashi and Tosfos felt, I added wood to your fire. The Rambam says, I added weight to your animal carrying weights. So we'll get to the Rambam in the next sugya, because the next sugya is about Adam Hamazik partially, where five people sitting on a bench and one guy comes and breaks the bench. So that's like putting extra weight on your animal. But according to Rashi and Tosos, we're talking about where Shimon adds extra firewood. Hechi dami. Same question. If there wasn't enough wood that Reuven added and Shimon's wood was necessary for the Eish to reach the damaged item, Shita, that's not something the Mishnah has to tell me. You're not partially, you're completely. Ella, the opposite case, to Belavi Uazla, that Reuven had enough firewood and fuel to make it to the item that was damaged, you just added extra? My COVID, you didn't do anything. Now, here Tosva says, okay, Mihu, excuse me, okay, here Tosa says as follows, that even though normally he agrees that the guy who left is chayv his share, here if Shimon just added a little bit of firewood and it would have reached it anyway, Tosa still should be pater. Tosfos, mihu, bazeh, tzarech ledakek. V'chi b'shvil shehishlech ish eitz b'toch eish gedola, yischayv? Halo dami ele lechofer bor yud ubach revishlim or yudah. Tosfos says, even though first guy that leaves pays one-fifth for a shomer that leaves, if a guy, Shimon, adds a little bit of firewood, an extra toothpick to a big raging fire, he didn't do anything. Namely, he's willing to read my kavod about the Eish person the way Rashi read about the first shomer. Again, when it comes to a shomer, Rashi says, my kavod, you don't pay anything. Tosfos says, my kavod, you pay your share, but not the full amount, therefore it's not a case of the Mishnah. It's not compatible with the Mishnah. When it comes to Marbe B'Chavila, adding firewood, Tosa says, look, if Reuven's fire is raging, and Shimon has a little small piece of wood, that's nothing, and Ma'akov, it means you're not chayv at all, and that's why I can't fit into the Mishnah, because Shimon would be pater entirely. Now, it does sound from Tosos that if Shimon adds not a toothpick to Reuven's raging fire, but Shimon adds a huge, huge canister of jet fuel, even though it was redundant, because Reuven's fire would have reached it anyway, they would split the damages. Did anyone remember a case we saw on Friday where they each created full capacity, even though it was redundant, they share liability? What do we call that? Tell us a little to it. 10 to 20. Excellent. And Tosus implies that. If Shimon adds a small eights to Reuben's big fire, what do you do? It's like 10 to 11. But if he adds a huge package of kerosene, he goes from 10 to 20, then they split the chayav. It's not so clear from all the poskim. Now, very few people know this, but there's actually a Mordechai that argues with Tosus. And I'm just going to read the Mordechai with you, and then I'll leave you with the question. Mordechai has nothing to do with Baba Kama, but it's a fascinating Mordechai. Let's just read it together very, very quickly. Okay, it's in the fifth parak. We turn to the Mordechai Simon Nunhei. Okay. What happened in the Mordechai? These are the questions of the poskim Ashkenaz that we don't have their sperm, unfortunately, because of all the torture they faced and the expulsions. So it's Nunhei. In the regular Gemaras, it is page Memches. So if you have a regular Gemara, it's Daf Memches. Otherwise, you're on your own. It's Simon Nunhei. It's on Daf Nun Dalet Amin Aleph. The Mordechai's perished in Nun Dalet Amin Aleph. Echad Asa Seuda. Person made a Seuda. Behizman Shamas Ruven Vespene Beso. And he invited Ruven, his entire family, Nainu Naphtali. Naphtali's part of the family. Benafla Meriva Benam, it was a big fight at the meal. Ba'amdu B'nei Basil Shal Ruven Vihiku Baal HaSuda. And Ruven's party trashed the place. They beat up the Baal HaSuda. Baal HaSuda and the host ran to the shofet, and he complained about Ruven and his party. At that point, Ruven was exonerated. The Yatzer Reuven was skipping the line. B'pamahum b'fnei ha'shofet. Kemra lov shelo pasha. Ela b'nei beisel pasha. They exonerated Reuven and said it wasn't him that was making the fracas. It was his slaves and stuff. And therefore, Reuven's pater. Okay. What happened a little later on? B'shuv ba Shimon and Krovo balasuda. Shimon, who was related to the host, came and he indicted Reuven, and he made Reuven lose money. Reuven had to pay back. And Shimon brought other goyim that also ate it. So this all came to the Marami Rottenberg. Who's chayiv? Because basically, is Shimon chayiv if we already have evidence against Reuven, and Shimon basically brings extra evidence against Reuven, and it turns out it's false evidence. So is Shimon chayiv because he tried to damage Reuven with false evidence, even though there already was false evidence that could have implicated Reuven? So basically, Shimon didn't really do anything extra. So why I'm reading this tshuva for you is not just because of the fight that broke out at the party, but this question came to the Marami Rottenberg on Erev Pesach. So he says, Asher be'erev Pesach, kishayinu trudim levaris achametz mikol tzadim, second to last line, is Erev Pesach, we're busy cleaning out our houses, nifnesi mikol iski, I stopped all my work, lahashiv al she'laschem darchitzar, just to give you an answer. And in his initial comments on Erev Pesach, the Marami Rottenberg says that maybe Shimon should be pater, because he didn't do anything, because there already was testimony that could indict Reuven, and therefore when Shimon was proven to be false, he didn't really damage Reuven, because we already had other evidence, and potentially false evidence to indict him. And he says, now on the next column, skipping a couple lines, does Shimon pater? Shimon, with his false indicting testimony against Reuven, is pater, because we already had false testimony against Reuven that could have made him chayif? Mide dahave amar v'chavilas. Just like someone that adds fire. The Balavihu, without the second guy, have Asla. The fire Reuven would have gone. Mike Ovid. What did the second guy do? Just like the second guy who adds firewood, his pater. Similarly, in this case of the fight in the party, Shimon, who added false implicating indicting testimony against Reuven, would be pater because someone else already tried to indict Reuven, and Shimon was just adding redundancies. Now here, Shimon is not just adding a small piece of wood. Shimon is giving a full. Shimon's giving a full testimony. And yet, the Marami Rottenberg wants to exonerate Shimon because it's redundant. It sounds like the Marami Rottenberg is arguing with Tosos. Tosos feels that Shimon's fire is only pater if he adds a small piece, but not a full capacity of fire. Whereas the Marami Rottenberg sounds like that even if Shimon adds a full fire, full false testimony, he'd be pater. And the question I leave you with, which we'll talk about tomorrow on Meretz Hashem, is Why? He tells us, of course, it makes more sense, because just like if you go from 10 to 20, you share liability. If you each add full fire capacity, we share liability. The only time we pater Shimon is if you just added a twig to a fire that was raging already. But from the Maharam Mirandenberg, it sounds like that if Shimon adds a full fire, he's pater. Just like in this case, Shimon added a full false implicating testimony, and yet he's pater. What's the difference between going from 10 to 20 in a bar where they share liability, l'kuli alma, as opposed to adding fire to fire? Full fire to full fire. What's the difference? That's the big question in this second. Think about it. Tomorrow, Amir Tzashem, I don't know, my schedule changes every couple minutes, but Amir Tzashem tomorrow, we'll talk about five people sitting on a bench. Okay, so just try to get a scope of what this Gemara is doing. The two lines of the Mishnah, the two Brises, Maser Sharo, the Chomer Brisa, Chomer Be'eshmi Bashor, Tamon, and Karka, and Kalim. Now we have three cases which the Gemara proposed for partial negligence, full liability, only one of which succeeded. Namely, the guy digs the extra tefach. If a person leaves, the Gemara says, wait a second. If he left the tiger, he's chayiv entirely. And that Mishnah doesn't tell me that. If he left a domesticated animal, either he's chayiv a fifth or nothing, but he's not chayiv everything. It can't be the Mishnah. And what about Marba B'chavila? The same thing. If he added enough fuel for a small fire to get there, then he did everything. That's Pasha. If the fire was raging and we'd gotten there anyways, he's added a few toothpicks, or even according to Brian Renberg, added a full canister of jet fuel, Mike Ovid, he didn't do anything, he's putter. Why should he be putter according to Rabbi Rettenberg if he added a full fire capacity? Okay, we will stop now, Mirtzeshem. When I get home, I'll try to send Makaros and Mirtzeshem for the Safsalachim. Okay? Thanks for bearing with me. A lot is happening, unfortunately. Unfortunately, the Rosh Hashiva, one of the Rosh Hashiva, just so you should know,